Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohamed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. In Central Asia, challenges of people with disabilities rarely hit the headlines. At a time when the government resources are sacred, civil society networks are weak, and when the region as a whole faced with numerous challenges, we wondered what are the difficulties or day-to-day struggle of these special citizens looks like. Who are helping them, what are done to integrate them into the society, and what further help they need to become an active member of the society. This is our topic of the discussion in this episode. To talk about all these questions, I'm joined by Gulnaz Juzbayeva, Kyrgyz activist who herself is a special citizen. Tahmina Hakimova, also activist. She is from Tajikistan, whose kid is one of these special citizens. Dilmurat Yusupov, writer from Uzbekistan, with focus on challenges of citizens with disabilities in his homeland. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. I should especially say thanks to you, Gulnaz, for remaining awake in this hour to do the show. I believe it is close to midnight there.
It's midnight, but it's my pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for your sacrifice. And thank you for your great work to help people in your situation. Very appreciated. So let's start with you, Gulnaz. I'm told that you are a special citizen yourself. So what are some of the basic challenges you face on day-by-day basis?
I am blind and I was born blind. And of course, every day I have challenges, but I always try to be positive and look positive side of the life. And the everyday challenges, I think I'm struggling with my study to access the materials in my university.
In general, are these schools equipped to respond to such needs, the needs like yours?
Not really. Hmm. So all the universities and their institutions that gives education to their public, they're not equipped like with special equipment, or there is no accessible material and accessible formats for blind people. And many blind and visually impaired people are enrolling to the universities, institutes and schools, but there have also many obstacles to access the materials and get information in accessible formats. We do have special schools, boarding schools for the blind and visually impaired people. In all country, we have just two schools. And there are many blind people left out of their education. Like, I'm working with blind people and I'm teaching blind people how to live independent lives. And there are many students coming from rural parts of the country and they never went through their school, so their ages are 20, 25, 30, 35 years old, and they are starting for the first time reading and writing their names.
Yeah, so, bravo. That it's not only that you are facing this challenge, but also working on behalf of the other people with disabilities. Great work. We will talk about your activism a little bit later, Gulnaz. Tahmina, in your case, you have a kid with special conditions. Are these challenges, the ones that Gulnaz was describing, any different in your country, in Tajikistan?
I'm based in London, so my child has... he's 7 and he has Down syndrome. But I'm an activist for Tajikistan.
Yeah.
But mainly for people and children with Down syndrome.
Hmm.
But yes, mainly the issues of and challenges that people with disabilities face, similar to what Gulnaz just said. But I would just maybe add a bit of the context in Tajikistan. So I think that the main big issue in Tajikistan is the cultural perception of people about people with any kind of disability, like, you know, the stigma, social stigma on people with disabilities is massive. I mean, myself growing up in Tajikistan, even now, you hardly can see people with any kind of disability outside. For many different reasons.
Well, talk a little bit about these reasons that you have in mind, why they are invisible in the society.
Yeah, they're invisible in the society. First thing is the family itself. It's like if you have a child with disability, you know, there's already stigma on you, even within your family. The blame is always on the woman. Of course, woman is always, you know, guilty of having a child with disability. And also there are different kind of stereotypes about it or prejudice that, you know, it's a sin, it's a punishment for you to have a child with disability.
Wow.
There is a shame, but there are also more, you know, deeper things as well. I think every day about it now. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's even, you know, if you don't talk about government yet or anything else, it's just within the family and society and community. But there is also this thing in Tajikistan, I'm sure it's in other Central Asian countries as well, because I'm a gender activist as well, I'm a feminist. And if you're a woman and if you have a disability, there's also you have not even double, you have multiple, you know, discrimination in a society everywhere you go. And for example, if a girl is born with this, any kind of disability and a boy is born, you know, the preference is given to, let's say, the boy to go to that special school, even special boarding school to study rather than the girl. And then if you have any child with disability, if you have a girl, like in your, I think especially if you have another child or another children, especially a girl who doesn't have any disabilities, you think about her future. You think about, you know, how she's gonna get married, who's gonna marry her. Because society, unfortunately, is like this, that they're not gonna, if they know that, you know, in the family there is some kind of disability, any kind of disability, even if you're wearing glasses sometimes, it's ridiculous as this, that people, you know, value your daughter and say, okay, she has a sister with disability or brother with disability. We don't want to marry, you know, we don't want our son to marry that woman. It's a bit different for men. If you are a man with a disability or a boy, you may marry another girl, but probably from very poor family. I mean, there are many other things. It's just so much stigma on it.
Wow.
But also, one also very, very important thing is that since I live here in a developed country, when I go back to my country, now since my son is born, I think more about people with disabilities. And the physical access itself, it's non-existent. You know, even if you're like, for example, with a buggy, you know, that means that, you know, I notice, I'm conscious of, there is no spaces where I could go with a buggy because the buggy also has wheels. Then I start thinking about people in wheelchairs. If you're in school, I read and I heard about so many stories that young women go to school or even universities. And then, you know, since if their class moves to the second floor, let's say third floor, there's no access. She can't go. She's on a wheelchair. She can't really go. So she has to quit the studies.
Okay, let's bring in Dilmurat into the discussion. So when we call citizens, Dilmurat, with disabilities, it involves various forms of conditions. And so in your experience as a writer, people with what form of disability is more vulnerable or more challenging in the country that you focus on or in our region?
I would like to add to Tahmina's opinion that disabled people are remain invisible. First, because they are remaining invisible because of the fact that I think the reason is deep in the history, because we were part of the Soviet Union, and there was kind of a saying in the Soviet Union that there are no invalids in the USSR, because they were all segregated in specialized institutions, and no one could see them, like walking in the streets, like they as they normally do, for example, in the UK or in the United States or in other developed countries. To your question about what types of people are experiencing more stigma, more discrimination, I would say that these are people with learning disabilities, as Tahmina was saying, that people with Down syndrome, people with autism, for example. People with autism are not even recognized in Uzbekistan, and then they don't usually put a diagnosis autism. And also, there are invisible disabilities. like people with invisible disabilities or mental disorders. I think those categories are experiencing the most kind of discrimination in our societies.
Bruce, you've been to those places, and Dilmurat just mentioned the Soviet time. So you've been to Central Asia during Soviet time and after Soviet time. The things that our guests are describing, I mean, in terms of their challenges, how would you compare them with the Soviet time? Were these challenges any different then compared to today?
Well, I think Dilmurad made the best point there by saying, you know, in the Soviet days, they would have more than likely found, you know, special institutions and schools, and you would hardly have ever seen these people. Now, of course, I had something of a different experience because I was working in villages, and there would be times when I would run into a family that had a child that had a learning disability or some other disability, you know, out in the rural areas where, you know, there's intermittent electricity and no running water. You can imagine that this was a heavy burden. I mean, you know, generally everyone knew who this child was in the village because I was working in small places. But in the meantime, you know, this since they didn't have any means of educating them and bringing them up or being able to cater to their special needs, although people were very kind, there was this fatalistic sense that, you know, that this child was just going to be living with its parents, you know, until either the child died or the parents died. And it was kind of heartbreaking in that way that there really wasn't much they could do for them. Now, when I went through the cities, of course, certainly in the early 1990s, they weren't prepared at all for this kind of thing. You know, sidewalks did not have low spaces where people could get up on wheelchairs. A lot of buildings had staircases and no elevator at all. They just weren't set up for it. There was no books in schools, at least the ones that I went to, that were in Braille, so that blind people could read them. So they're getting better. You said at the very start of the show that the problem is that there are a lot of problems in Central Asia that they need to deal with at the moment, and prioritizing them all too often leaves people people with special needs behind. I'm glad to see there is some progress, but still, you know, I mean, it lags very, very far behind. And, you know, Tachmina made a good point that all, sadly, instead of trying to help people that find themselves in this condition and their relatives, people a lot of times seem to have this impression that somehow or another something happened in the family that earned them this, which of course is preposterous.
Yeah.
Can I add on this point?
Yeah.
I would say that in general, there are two things here, as Tahmina and Bruce are mentioning. These first is like attitudes towards disabled people, like negative perceptions, stigma, discrimination based on like traditional or cultural perceptions of disability. And on the other hand, lack of accessibility, like a reasonable accommodation and like lack of a suitable environment for disabled people. So we are talking about two things in general when we are talking about disabled people in Central Asia. And about the parents taking care of their children, and I think there is a problem of hyperprotection, like overprotection, when like parents, they are too protective of their children. So even if they are grown up, for example, a disabled child, he grows up, he becomes adult, he still is considered to be a child. And protection is good, but overprotection can ruin the life of a disabled child because he will be staying in home and like he will be protected by his family. So he will not be participating in the societies on equals with others.
Gulnaz, Tahmina, you know, feel free to add anything to what's been said, and anytime, just stop me.
Yeah, so I would agree with all these issues because we are in Kyrgyzstan also, we are facing such issues. So the overprotection of their relatives and the parents, they are bringing to their child, like there is no future for their child because their parents are not like, it's a nature, their parents goes first. So
yeah,
they're not thinking about their future. They think that they will live with them like all their lives. So when they're grown up and when they're alone, they're not prepared for their life. So
yeah,
for this reason, I think we have to like more inform parents who have a child with disabilities.
Thank you very much.
So can I just add to that?
Sure.
So I think that one of the parts of the question that you were mentioning, why these families are hiding their kids, one of the things that I was actually thinking was that it's also the way of the protecting them from the society, from the these negative people who are out there. I don't know, maybe kids laughing at their children or something like that. Could be this also in some cases. And I just wanted to add something into the challenges. I think that it's doctors. The doctors in Tajikistan, the specialists, the medical specialists in Tajikistan, starting from maternity houses. In the beginning of January, one doctor from the maternity house put me in contact with one young woman who just had a child with Down syndrome. So she wanted to know, she had already one child, she just wanted to know what are these kids and, you know, what to expect and things. And I was in touch with her, chatting around and, you know, just encouraging her not to reject her child, because the thing she was telling me was absolutely horrible about the expectations of her child with Down syndrome that was born. And the woman was terrified. And I said, who is telling you these not very nice stories? And she said, the doctors and the nurses around me. I said, please do not believe. Look at my child. Look at my beautiful child. I'll send the pictures. And I said, you know, this is what we can do. And then I have a parent group that I'm, you know, just created. So we talk about her experience. I put her in that group. And she just told me that the doctors themselves and nurses are telling her to reject the child, leave the child, and then they'll, you know, take care of the child, give it to the orphanage. And then she said, my husband also wants me to reject. This is very often happens that the husband and the mother-in-law get interfered and say, me or this child. And then this child, unfortunately, gets into the orphanage. That's what happened with this woman. She said to me that I'm not going to reject my child. Huh. And then when I've asked, I start writing to her the next morning. She didn't write to me. Huh. And then the doctor just told me she just rejected her child.
Wow.
I was so frustrated because I couldn't convince her. And for me, every child, every baby with Down syndrome is like, you know, somebody rejected my child. And I don't blame the woman, but all the things that she was going through from the child was just born. In the developed world, anybody can say your child has, it's confirmed your child has Down syndrome. You need to give a, you know, blood test, especially blood test. In 7 days or 1 week's time, we can get confirmation.
Education needs to go beyond parents than, you know, the way you are describing that.
Yes.
Tamina, so Dilmurat, earlier you mentioned that you said the stereotypes coming from Soviet times. So what is the source of this negativity? Can we clean ourselves by blaming the Soviets in this? Or there are more reasons than one?
The example that Tahmina was describing was, it actually relates to medical, like purely medical understanding of disability, which also takes its roots in the Soviet Union. Because for many people in Central Asia, I mean, in Uzbekistan and other countries, I think disability is conflated with illness and sickness, which should be cured. And the only solution is medical rehabilitation. And in Tahmina's case, Down syndrome is considered to be an illness, or like sickness or abnormality, which is not, should not be accepted and should be treated or anything like this. And actually, if you look into the legal definition of disability in, for example, in Uzbekistan, disability is impairment or like it's illness or sickness. So, you know, the problem is in medical understanding of disability. So, and medical personnel like doctors, nurses, or any other staff members, they always have lots of power in deciding what to do, like placing this child into a specialized institution or taking this child out of the family or advising family not to take this child home. So they have really like a strong power in this issue. So we also have to deal with their attitudes and educate them, as like Muhammad, you were saying. And also this all goes to back to Soviet Union where this was happening, and the only solution was to medically rehabilitate those people so that they become normal and then they participate in the society. So the requirement for them was normality, and the concept of normality is really strong in our societies still.
Okay. I'm going to challenge you, Dilmurat, in this concept. It's been 25 years. Soviet is a history now. So why it's not changing? Let's do that a little bit in the second part of the discussion. So this is the reality on the ground. So who is helping Central Asian citizens with particular challenges? What further help they need to fully integrate into the society? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today in the Majlis Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia podcast. I'm joined by Gulnaz Juzbayeva, Kyrgyz activist, Tahmina Hakimova, also activist from Tajikistan, Dilmurat Yusupov, writer from Uzbekistan with focus on challenges of citizens with disabilities in his homeland, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owasi. I am Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing challenges of people with disabilities in Central Asia. Also, you know, I hope it's not really visible that from the last couple of days I'm going through a severe flu, but I could not pass this discussion. So I hope in trying to do something good, I'm not harming. But I'm so glad that we are doing this show. And again, thank you very much for agreeing to join the discussion. So, Tahmina, let's go into a little bit into a solution-oriented discussion. In your case, you have been there for any and every help your kid needed. But usually, where the help comes from to people with special needs in Tajikistan?
Oh, this is a very, very difficult question, if the help comes at all. But that's why I decided to become an activist. And at the moment, I'm fundraising for and do some projects for the kids with Down syndrome. But where the help comes, I mean, if you look at the recent actions of the government, it's quite positive. In a way, because it's, you know, the government of Tajikistan, I mean, the president signed the convention on the rights of people with disabilities in March last year. I mean, it's a big step, and there's been a big campaign about it by the, you know, coalition of associations, parents of children with disabilities. Now there are like 36 of them all over the country. So it's their big success. I mean, there should be a ratification, and then the implementation and the mechanism developed. It's another story. But there are all these, you know, the really good grassroots movements at the moment, which are quite active. Huh. Like I said, for example, this coalition of association of parents of children with disabilities. There are, you know, obviously, the, you know, international communities supporting them. This is the sort of the main important or key actors in this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Gulnaz, so you are one of the activists. So in doing your job, so what kind of challenges you as an activist face, and where, what kind of help you get from whom?
It was really challenging because in my group, we are all blind people, organized public association, like non-governmental organization, with the goal of to help other blind people. So first challenge was when like we are trying to break those stigmas and stereotypes that all the disabled people are not capable doing something. So we are trying to show to the public that we are more capable than they think. So we try to do everything by ourselves, and the reaction of other people was really low, like different, like low expectations from us. Like, what can you do? So you are blind. So in general, but of course there are many people, if we will show that we are what we are doing and the what we can do and the prove that thing, people are open and can understand everything. They are very supportive.
Tahmina and Gulnaz, to both of you, I mean, for a minute, just imagine an ideal world that you have all the resources you need to complete your next project. And so what would be your next project?
My next project will be actually in spring, in April, because I'm fundraising at the moment. But if I would have all the resources, that I think, I mean, talking about the children with Down syndrome and people with Down syndrome in Tajikistan, I want to see them, first of all, healthy. I want them to go through whatever routine my son goes annually, check their, I don't know, thyroid levels, endocrine system, heart, all these things, everything is set up, that all the doctors are educated So we've educated the doctors so that they don't tell the parents when they come, you know, child is a vegetable, go back, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I want to see my children, I call them my children, but, you know, happily going to nurseries, even to mainstream nurseries, kindergartens, happily included with all other children. And then I want to see them going to the primary schools and then, you know, whatever schools, and to be included fully and accepted. Inclusion, it's not just, you know, there is a law or national program on inclusion. Let's put one kid with Down syndrome there. And then, you know, just he's sitting somewhere in the corner. No, it's fully included, like my son is. Mm. I want to see that parents are empowered. The parents have the capacity. They're trained. They know how to develop their children. It is at the moment they lack this.
Yep, yep.
I would like to add to this question, Muhammad, about the, what kind of support is available.
Sure, something? yeah, please.
I think the main support comes from the government, which still kind of continues the system which was started in the USSR again. For example, we have specialized like medical labor expert commissions, which identify, like, which recognize disability and they register disabled people as disabled. And then the government provides disability pension, which is a really limited amount of money, like less than 50 USD in Uzbekistan, which is not enough. But the attitude of the government is that, okay, we are providing you with disability pension and then you keep calm and we are solving this problem. But you can't solve this problem only by giving a disability pension. And in addition to the government support, there is the government is supporting rehabilitation centers and also which also are strengthening the medical understanding of disability. And on the other hand, there are several kind of NGOs or disabled people's organizations. In Uzbekistan, there are approximately 70 disabled people's organizations, which are now united by the Association of Disabled People of Uzbekistan. They're trying to campaign like for the rights of disabled people and trying to change the attitudes towards them, but probably unsuccessfully. In my imagination, the government is not listening to them and is still kind of saving medical understanding of disability. And one more thing I want to say that on the other hand, disabled people are considered as objects of charity. Like Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan are mainly Muslim. Although we are secular, we are Muslim countries, and they are considered as objects of charity. So people give zakat, for example, or they give sadaqah, like almsgiving. There are kind of support also available from the cultural, like Islamic viewpoint. So there are three kind of supports available for
and
disabled people.
Were these supports were also available when the our countries were under Soviet Union?
Yeah, the main system was the medical labor expert commissions, which I was mentioning. So it was like a welfare system and on the disability pension. I think during Soviet Union, disability pension was relatively enough for sustaining life. But after we gained our independence and after, like, because we are, our countries are like low-income and middle-income countries, and our budget, like government budget, cannot afford paying large amounts of disability pensions. So I think the situation in the Soviet Union was much better than now in terms of this. Also, there were other like specialized enterprises for blind people, for physically impaired people, for deaf people. There are still some enterprises in Tashkent, so if you go there, but they are all like went bankrupt after independence. Less than 2% of all registered disabled people are working now in Uzbekistan, for example.
Bruce, it brings me to a comparative question. As Dilmurat was saying, that things seems to be going backward instead of going forward after 25 years of independence, especially in when it comes to treating citizens of special needs in Central Asia. Why is that? There is a lack of resources, lack of well. What's that?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's a little bit of that, but, you know, this comes back to prioritizing what the needs of the country are. The programs that they had in the Soviet Union were centrally planned in Moscow. They were implemented, you know, in the republics, but they weren't planned. You know, the majority of those programs weren't planned in the republics, so they didn't have a lot of experience with this. when they became independent. Now, I wouldn't say that we're entirely going backward. I think we were for a while, but I think now that in the last few years that all the governments, certainly couldn't speak for Turkmenistan, but I have seen more articles lately. Dil Murad writes about this regularly for one, but they do seem to have finally come around to believing that they really do have to do something. So, from a very low base, they are starting to help out somewhat. They're far behind, that's true. There's limited amounts of funds for these kind of programs in some countries. Our Kazakh service just did a story earlier this week for the programs for people who can't hear, for the deaf. And they said that, they don't have many people who are trained in doing sign language, so it's hard for these people to communicate, besides the fact that it's hard for them to get jobs and everything. But the government does have a program to send people out who can do sign language and help to teach these people how to communicate when they can't speak and can't hear, how to use sign language. But they only, until recently, it was only 30 hours a year, right? So they've doubled that to 60 hours a year. But even the article made plain that, these people, that they're grateful for that, certainly, that they get at least that. 60 hours a year is not much, obviously, but because it is so little, when these people do show up, what they have to do is go and do all the business stuff, that, any questions they have about utilities, documentation, anything like that. They instead of these people being able to come and help them, with maybe learning better sign language or going shopping or something like that, they end up having to go and do all the official work because that's the only 60 hours they have with these people, and they have to get everything taken care of. So it's not time that's used as effectively as it could be. It's not much time to begin with, but it's more than what was happening 10 years ago.
Yeah, but still, I find this really depressing. But is there any good stories? I mean, is there any institution which is performing relatively better in dealing with the situation and responding to citizens' special needs?
Can I add on this?
Yeah, sure.
I think, Bruce is also correct because, for example, in Uzbekistan, after President Mirziyoyev came into power in 2016, there were considerable changes. For example, there was a decree in December 2017, on strengthening support for disabled people.
Okay.
And I've been hearing news about, for example, first mosque in Tashkent has become a sign language kind of accessible for deaf and visual, like hearing impaired people.
Okay.
So there are some really good stories as
What
well, but
else? What else? Like mosque? Yeah, that's one example. But what else? Something positive that's happening in Central Asia? I mean, is there any institution which stands out compared to the others in terms of performing better in responding to the situation that's faced by the citizens of special needs?
I think Gulnaz can add on this because
Gulnaz?
I've been hearing stories from Kyrgyzstan, about ratification of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with
Yes.
Disabilities.
Okay, let's
Yes.
move beyond just ratification stuff in terms of is there
Yeah.
any institution, Gulnaz, that you can present as an example that is performing better than the others?
We have separate, it's not long term, maybe short term programs that doing progress, and if we will, or we will have support from the government or from some other resources to make it more long term, maybe we could make a progress. So, for example, we have lots of non-governmental organizations who are really doing good, great programs for people with disabilities. But unfortunately, there are a few organizations, not all of them. And unfortunately, most some organizations, maybe some people are just using people with disabilities like object, like Dil Murad said object of charity events, and they're raising lots of money, but this money not going to those people who really needs this money. So, and in my experience, so I can tell just about my experience, so I cannot tell for other people. So for my training program, we're trying to be like teach to other blind people
be positive, and we are trying to break that stigma that their dependency, like, because all the people with disabilities used to be dependent, like dependent from other people's like decision, like someone was giving their solution for them. So that's why we are trying to teach to our blind students that they need to change first, like their mindsets, and the not just asking help from others, like they should think what they can do first.
I agree with Gulnaz. We also have many NGOs in Uzbekistan, but the approach is always like charity approach. For example, they organize like charitable events, like a massive cloth feast or anything like giving presents. But they are used again as objects of charity, not equal citizens, which have the right to education, employability, and all the stuff. So there are very good like feasts, like ceremonies, traditional events on holidays, like on Nowruz or like on during Ramadan or during like the International Day of Persons with Disabilities. But they are all through the prism of charity. And then this approach makes disabled people like dependent on charity because they are like passive recipients of charity. They are not like active citizens. And this is, I think this is not a good approach to the problem, to the issue. So we should change this in to like rights-based approach rather than like a charity approach.
Yes, the most organizations, like we have lots of organizations and businesses that it's like social, like corporate social responsibility of their like organizations, and that they are trying to help some, for example, orphanages or for blind people, or they are choosing their like target group, and they're like most of the organizations, I think. It's, I don't know, maybe it's cultural issue, or I don't know. They think that disabled people are always in a poverty, and they need only food. They're just giving food. And if you're trying to change this, when we are asking also help, we are always saying, okay, if you want to change their like society and help, you're trying to help, please contribute to their education, not just giving a fish, but we have to teach how to catch a fish.
Exactly.
It's been a while. We could be discussing this for hours, but let's end the discussion for the sake of Gulnaz, I would say. Final point is, it's kind of, let's say, it's a wish or wishful thinking. So given all these challenges, if there was one step which, if taken, could have maximum impact in the life of citizens with special needs, especially in order to fully integrate, you know, our brothers and sisters with disabilities to the society, what that step would be, what that help would be. Who wants to start this? Maybe Bruce?
Well, I would just, I'll go from my own personal experience. Obviously, I grew up in California, and when we were in school, the school for children with special needs was right next door to us.
Yeah.
And we had time where we mixed with them all several times a week.
Yeah.
And you had, as we got older, and by older, I mean 8 or 9 years old, we could take, there was like electives, more or less what they called. You could have an hour of some time where you had to do something, but you could pick what you wanted to do. And in my case, I did choose to go and work with the people. Some of them were physically handicapped, some of them were mentally handicapped, but we saw them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously small children can be cruel, but there was also a lot of us that weren't like that, and that we did see these people, and we did make friends with them, and we got used to the fact that they were there. And so I grew up understanding, you know, that there's various degrees of disability and how that works. And, you know, ultimately, I think just that these are people, and good, really good people. Like I said, we had a lot of good times together. And I think it really helped me and my friends, you know, early on in life to understand that they're among us. And that's a good thing, actually.
Okay.
I would agree that when all the disabled people are like visible in general public, people will accept those people.
Yeah.
Like the thing is, the community should, if we want to change community, we have to be visible, like from their childhood if their kids are with disabilities. Oh. Like, we shouldn't be separate. Like, we should be like in their public. So
let's end our discussion with some of these wishes. So Dil Murad and Tahmina, I believe. Yeah. So what would be your wish? I mean, if we could take one step to improve, what that would be.
So based on our conversation, I think we can conclude that disability is understood in Central Asia as mainly as a medical issue or like a charity issue. Huh. This should be changed, and disability should become a human rights issue, because disabled people, they have the equal right to education, employment, just to participate in the society. And to do this, I think we need to focus on two things. First is to empower disabled people themselves to work with disabled children and disabled adults, and through education, through inclusive education. And on the other hand, we should mainstream disability into our society. We should change attitudes of medical professionals, of teachers, even journalists, researchers who are doing research on this. So trying to frame disability as not a charity or like a medical issue, but as a rights issue. So I think these are two things that we should do in the future.
Okay. Yeah. Tahmina, what would be your wish?
Can I just wanted to add, give a little bit of a brief perspective on Tajikistan on the previous question. Just wanted to say that I've been very impressed with what is going on at the moment. For example, last year after the president signed the convention, there's been this public awareness campaign, which is called Each One of Us is Able. Huh. And it's a government-led campaign, I mean, together with UNICEF and other organizations. But it's just amazing. It has all this kind of, on the mass media, lots of things, stories about positive stories about people with disabilities. There's a really beautiful cartoon about this girl, Nozanin, who's on a wheelchair. They had this animation, and it's on the children's, state children's TV station. You know, this is really good. Other children start looking, and even there is the sign language appearing more on the, state TV stations. And then, so it's quite positive. And also, I've learned that there is the government, together with Open Society Institute, set up over 30 social service facilities, which provides early intervention and social support. What I see in Tajikistan, what NGOs a lot work on at the moment is more on, there's a lot of work on early intervention, but I don't see, like, for example, employability of people with disabilities.
Yes.
And I don't see, talking about Down syndrome especially, I'm trying to find and count by hand adults with Down syndrome so I can work with them, so I can start doing something. The one by one, trying to pilot things that they work in some way, let's say private companies, factories, something. So this is, I think, quite challenging and quite, this is missing. Huh. And in terms of what I would like to say, the question, I've got your question, last question, but everything that was said is important. The visibility of, first of all, the visibility of, and I guess, how can you say, visibility of people with different kind of disabilities. When you live with them, you see them everywhere. Uh-huh. Yes, of course, this is very important. And then you're not scared of them. I was scared of them growing up, because if I see one of them somewhere, some different person with different special needs, I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know what to expect. And also, I think one also very important issue is in Tajikistan, lack of specialists who work in those institutions where these people are institutionalized, on those boarding schools that our kids are put with disabilities. There is like no specialist. There's like very little, and they're not up to date their knowledge. And all kinds of disabilities are put in one sort of pot, one school, and it's just, it needs to be changed.
Yeah, it's going to change, Tahmina, when a government gets involved, right? When you raise these questions, what response you get from the authorities?
This is very interesting, because with my campaign at the moment, with my activism, I started to Because I will have a photo exhibition of children with Down syndrome that I took last year in Tajikistan. So I'll have it in London on 9th of March, and I'll have a series of them, the same exhibitions in Dushanbe and Khujan. It's very interesting. I had a meeting with the ambassador here.
This is a ridiculous story.
No, I'm curious about this.
Wait, so I went to meet with him and I said, look, I'm having these photo exhibitions, very important. I'll be inviting a different kind of media. You need to be involved. I would like you give me this honor to open this event and participate. And I was really surprised because first there was quite a big avoidance of, because I've been, you know, for a month I've been trying to tell them to participate. There were lots of questions and things. But when I met finally with him, it was very positive. It was very supportive. Even offered to write letters from him himself on behalf of the ambassador if I need some fundraising, you know, to any other organizations. And in Tajikistan, I have some people that acquaintances that I know that work in the government as well, like in the president's party. And then when I approached her, my good acquaintance, and I said, look, I'm having these photo exhibitions. I'll be doing training for parents. I need some support. Do you have any ideas? Do you have connections? And she just said, after a while, she said, the party will support you. We will help you to provide the space for the training. You can do it in the room of the party that is in my hometown. And you can do, you know, we would like to do it together, still in a pleasant shock. And, you know, and hopefully this will bring some, you know, some more advocacy work. And, you know, the first thing I think that for Tajikistan government, any government, I think, to accept that there are people with disabilities, for them to agree that they exist. And then, you know, then you can do more of more advocacy work.
So have you started the training, Tahmina?
The trainings will be when I go to Tajikistan. I'm planning to go on end of March, and I'll have some trainings for parents.
Sorry for interrupting, but I heard the story from Tahmina before, and at that stage, the ambassador of Tajikistan in the UK was not agreeing to participate. So I was saying that it's a ridiculous story, but I'm happy that at the end he agreed to be part of it. So it's great news. Yeah.
It's a great news. We are hearing lots of negative news coming out of Tajikistan involving many different fields. If one thing is positive, you know, this is positive. So we are happy about that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Tahmina Hakimova, Tajik activist. Also, big thanks goes to Gulnaz Juzbayeva, Kyrgyz activist, and Dilmurat Yusupov, writer from Uzbekistan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blog Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today.
Mr. Tahir, can everyone give Gulnaz, can you give us, tell us what your organization is called? Talk me to any addresses or names of your organizations. This is a chance for free publicity. Please don't miss it.
Our organization is the Kyrgyz Federation of the Blind. And right now we are providing a rehabilitation training program for blind adults for independent living.
Is it the American University of Central Asia?
Yes.
Terrific.
So, Murad, can you name an organization in Uzbekistan that's doing good work?
Yes, there is an NGO which I co-founded with a group of disabled women, which is called Sharoit Plus. So we are trying to promote a rights-based approach to disability. And also there is an Association of Disabled People of Uzbekistan, which is the umbrella organization uniting all disabled people's organizations in Uzbekistan.
And Tahmina, we know about your photograph exhibit coming up, but do you have an organization that you run also?
I'm a blogger. I became a blogger as well. So I have my own sort of blog page, if you can say, website with a blog, but also with resources for parents. And it's becoming bigger now. So, and it's called Nazari Digar. Nazari Digar is from Tajik. It's a different perspective. So this is for parents of children with Down syndrome. I'm actually thinking of doing something about it now because I'm getting lots of support, and I see that, you know, people are getting, parents are getting the support as well. And I'm actually thinking of maybe, you know, registering it or doing something with this. So it's hopefully will be Nazari Digar. You hear about.
Okay, terrific.
Terrific. Great.
Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.